Moncrief on News Talk.
Since the election of Mary Robinson and through the presidents that came after her, the role of the Irish presidency has changed. It's still largely a ceremonial role, but the incumbents have used their influence and soft power to take a more activist role, speaking out on a range of issues. Laura Cahalane is a professor in the School of Law in the University of Limerick. And in today's Examiner, wonders if an activist president is actually what we want. Laura, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Sean.
In your piece today, it was kind of interesting. You did write a little bit about before we had a president and how that was envisaged. Originally, there were proposals to give the president a lot more power.
Well, originally, our presidency was going to be based on the presidency in Germany. The Weimar Constitution was a big influence on the Irish constitutions. And when our current constitution was being drafted, obviously, we were looking at the rise of dictatorial regimes in other jurisdictions in Europe. And so people started to ask questions as to whether we could see something like that happening here. So as a direct response to that, it was decided that the Irish presidency should be very much a restrained and a limited office.
Mm. Now, but it seems even within that it's a restrained and limited office, it seems to be the tradition has been it's been bound by conventions.
Very much so, because and it's similar in lots of parts of the Constitution. There are certain parts that are written down, and then there are other parts that are kind of understood, and there are practices that have been built up over a number of years. So while the role of the president is set out in the Constitution, for example, it never actually says that the president is the head of state, even though we know the president is the head of state, but it's not specifically written in there. So there are certain practices like that that were always understood at the time. But the thing about conventions is because they're not written down, it means that they actually can change and evolve over time. And that's an advantage in a way with conventions.
And was the feeling very much when this was all initially written down, that the one thing they ever always wanted to avoid was some sort of conflict between the president and the government of the day? Or at the time, was that thought to be unimaginable?
Well, they certainly wouldn't have envisaged any major conflict between the president and the government. And they did put in certain provisions in there to try to ensure that that wouldn't happen. You know, many people might be surprised to see that in the Constitution it says that the president has to receive permission from the government before leaving the state. And there's also a provision in there that says if the president wants to address the Oireachtas, that they have to get permission from the government in terms of what they're going to say. If they want to address the nation, they have to call the Council of State first, and they have to get permission from the government in terms of the content of that speech.
Mm. Now, what does address the nation mean, though? Because a president can make a speech in, I would imagine, a number of different contexts that will be nationally reported.
Exactly. And this is how things have changed a little bit. In the 1930s, if the president was going to address the nation, obviously it would have been a big planned event. These days, any small sort of event that the president is involved in can turn into an address to the nation, in the sense that you have instant media, social media, and comments are being reported. And so that is a convention that has sort of fallen away since the time of Mary Robinson. She would speak out on issues and would say, well, this isn't really an address to the nation. This is just something that I'm speaking about. And so she didn't seek permission to speak on these issues. And that practice then seems to have developed and followed on from then.
And I assume at the time when Mary Robinson was president and she started to, if you like, stretch the parameters, that the governments of the day weren't necessarily happy about that.
They were very unhappy with that, in fact. But Mary Robinson was such a popular president, there wasn't very much they could do. I mean, they did try to restrain her at the beginning. She was invited to the BBC Dimbleby lecture series. You know, they tried to prevent her from going to certain things because they thought she might criticise the Irish way of life or make the Irish government look bad in some way. But gradually they realised that the more they tried to restrain her, the more popular she became and the less popular they became, I guess. So in the end, they kind of had to step back and let her do what she wanted to do.
And since then, by the people who came after her, has it been stretched even further in your view?
Well, they've certainly followed on in a similar vein. I mean, Mary Robinson, as a constitutional lawyer, kind of spotted the fact that the Constitution could facilitate a more activist interpretation of the rule, because while, again, as we're saying, certain bits are written down, there are other areas where she saw that you could push the boundaries a little bit. So each of the presidents since have done that in their own way. And because of that, they have been very popular presidents. And I guess you could argue that they've revitalized the presidency, given that before the time of Mary Robinson, there were calls for abolition of the office. And we certainly haven't seen anything like that since.
Yeah. And I mean, going back as far as the thundering disgrace scandal, that was probably, since De Valera up to Mary Robinson, that's about the only time that a president was involved in any sort of controversy.
Well, certainly. And I mean, that is the very reason why Carúla Dalig felt that he had to resign in that particular incident, because you wouldn't have seen the president being involved in a controversy. And, you know, at that stage, when the minister who called the president a thundering disgrace refused to resign, well, the president felt that, well, I have no choice but to resign in that case.
Yeah, even though he was acting entirely within his remit at the time. But are we now in a place, Laura, where it's all changed utterly? There's even the people campaigning to be president, and Jim Gavin has made a comment about housing. Gareth Sheridan, we don't know if he's going to actually run or not, but he says he's in the race because he wants to draw a shine a light on housing as well. They are political issues. So that's what we've got now. And that's perhaps what the media and what the public expect.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking about this recently on Commission Talcon. We're in University of Limerick recently asking students, what do you want from a presidency? And they were saying things like, we want somebody who's outspoken. We want somebody who will represent our views. But I guess the thing is, if you are happy with the idea that somebody is outspoken, then you have to accept that they're not always going to represent your views. So I guess it's one thing if a president is going to speak out on humanitarian issues, broad matters of national concern, social justice issues. But if you have a president who sees things in a different light and feels that they should, veer more into the realm of policy, then that's where you may get people saying, well, actually, that president isn't representing my views, and they're saying things that don't sound very presidential.
Though presumably we'll know that in advance.
Well, I mean, this is the hope, that when you're looking at the current campaign and you're looking at the kind of things that people are saying, that you'd hope that the aspiring candidates know what the role of the president is and knows where the limitations are. I mean, we've seen pretty crazy things coming out of some of the aspiring candidates, you know, saying that as president, they will command the military to enter IPAS centres and remove asylum seekers. You know, so there has to be an understanding of what the role is. But as citizens and as people who are watching the election, I guess we have to decide for ourselves then, in terms of what they're saying they're going to do with the presidency, you know, do we agree with their vision of what the presidency is?
Yeah, because one imagines when in the last three presidential elections that we had, people had a pretty clear idea of what Mary Robinson, Mary McAleese and Michael D. Higgins stood for. So they were kind of voting for that.
Exactly. And this is the thing. Those presidents have been very popular. People have been very happy with the presidency as it has evolved over the last few years. So, I mean, I think we now expect that a president will continue that role as a sort of a moral speaker for the nation. But I suppose there's a difference between doing that and trying to become overtly political, which is something which is a little bit different.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's probably fair to say the three confirmed candidates we have would probably have a high awareness of that. As you say, there were some aspirant candidates who didn't seem to know what the president could or couldn't do. The fact that one of them's already dropped out, the one who wanted to send the army into IPAS centres, doesn't that show the system works?
Well, this, you know, you can make a valid argument that by having a difficult process to become a candidate, that's a good filtering mechanism in terms of making sure that the candidates who actually make it through as official candidates have been screened in some way. I mean, some people would argue the opposite, that it makes it too difficult for independent candidates to come through. But I mean, over the last couple of elections, we have seen independent candidates coming through there. So, it is acting as a filtering mechanism.
Yeah. And generally speaking, do you think the entry into the presidential election, that it is democratic enough?
Well, it's probably something that we should look at if it is the case that we have very few candidates. If we end up with very few candidates for the current election, because obviously, democratically, it would be nice to have a variety of candidates to choose from. If candidates are complaining that the political party system makes it too difficult to break through, you know, maybe it's something we should be looking at.
Yeah. Is it possible to remove a president? If, say, God forbid, we elected somebody and they gave an erroneous view of the kind of person they were, and then when they upon office, they started jumping into areas of policy and things way outside the presidential remit. Is there anything we could do about that?
Well, we can. There is an impeachment process in the Constitution. Obviously, it's never been used in Ireland, but you would have to prove that the president has committed some sort of misbehaviour. So they would have to act outside of their roles in order to be able to remove them.
Yeah. So, are you worried that a person such as you described might get elected?
I'm not too worried. I think the Irish people are very clever in terms of assessing people's stances on issues. But I think we have to always consider these things in the current climate. When you see what's happening in other countries internationally, and you see people speaking out on issues that, you know, we might regard in Ireland as being very divisive. So it's something that we always have to be cognizant of. We can't insulate ourselves from what's happening elsewhere and assume that something like that is never going to happen here.
Yeah. Laura, thanks very much for speaking with us today. That was Laura Cahalain there, professor at the School of Law at the University of Limerick.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.